Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the Haunted Collection. I'm your host, author, paranormal investigator, and haunted collector, Kevin Kane. And it's great to be back. I know I missed a week or two. I've decided, because I don't want to run out of stories to entertain you with, that instead of doing a weekly show, I would just do a bi-weekly show, especially with the holidays coming up and gets a lot busier on the weekends. There are events going on, and so I feel it's probably a lot better to do this maybe just twice a month instead of weekly, and it gives me more time to plan for the most awesome stories to share with you. I love a good scary story. I love a good ghost story. I just love it all. That's why I'm a one of the reasons I'm a paranormal investigator. The other reason, I love to help people. I love to help people understand the paranormal, especially when someone is having problems in their own home or their own business. I love to go in with my paranormal team and try to help them understand what's going on, especially when people are scared. It's good to try to reassure them. It's good to be able to debunk things to help them not be as afraid if they're hearing noises or they think they're seeing things. If it is a spirit, it's always good to find out if it's something positive, just to help them to understand how to coexist with it. Or if it's something really nasty, we like to try to help get rid of it. So we've had some nasty situations here and there, but mostly it's been good. I really love working with the paranormal. I also do haunted collecting, as I've mentioned before, so I have pretty much a paranormal party right here in my own home with the tons of items that I've collected from investigations and from other investigators around the world. I have 200-plus haunted items. In episode 2 of our program, I did share the story of Patty, the very first haunted item that I ever had, actually a haunted doll. And I hope to share more stories about those items in future shows. But right now, it's November the 18th, and we are coming up on Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving Day is this coming Thursday. So what better thing to do than to share with you a nice, spooky Thanksgiving story. Now, this one, I believe, comes from right here in America, actually. It took place in New England. The name of this story is called The Telltale Seaweed, and yes, it takes place on Thanksgiving. It sounded like a good idea when it was first proposed, spending the Thanksgiving vacation with the Ronan family in their house on Cape Cod. Gwen and Juliet Davis's minds were filled with pictures of traditional Thanksgiving in New England. Cape Cod was, after all, pretty close to where Thanksgiving began. What better place to celebrate? The romance of the idea began to fade as soon as they began the drive up. Coming out of New Jersey, the traffic was terrible. Gwen and Juliet knew it was a holiday weekend and they should have left early to avoid the traffic, but they hadn't. Why? For exactly the same reason that hundreds of thousands of others jamming the roads had not. They thought they could get away with it. We've all been there. The sun was setting before they reached Rhode Island, and it was pitch black, pitch dark, long before they reached the Cape. Then there was the weather. It wasn't clear and sparkling as it had been in all of Gwen and Juliet's mental pictures. On the contrary, the day was damp and gray, and as they neared the Cape, the fog began to swirl about them. Pellets of sleet crashed against the windshield, and on the radio the weatherman was talking about a traveler's advisory. It was, as Glenn noted sarcastically and repeatedly, a lovely night for a drive. The Cape Cod trip had been principally Juliet's idea, and now that things were going wrong, Gwen was not about to let her forget it. Finally, and most ominously, there was the car itself. According to the ads, Volvos were supposed to last an average of 11 years. Juliet's Volvo was 12 years old and not at all well. It had been making funny noises for about a week. All this time, Juliet had insisted that there was nothing seriously wrong. In fact, she had secretly feared that there was something seriously wrong because she didn't have the money to have the car repaired. She hoped it would get through the Thanksgiving trip anyway. By the time they actually reached the Cape, the old Volvo was not only making funny noises, it was trembling violently. Then it stalled once or twice and died altogether. Neither Gwen nor Juliet knew the first thing about automobile motors. They didn't know where they were. As luck would have it, the car had kept running until it reached a very dark and deserted spot. There wasn't another car in sight. And since it was already very late, there seemed a good chance that it would be a long time before another car passed by. There might be no more traffic on that road until morning. The weather turned colder, the fog got thicker, and the sleet fell even harder. The girls were overwhelmed by a feeling of hopelessness and panic. A person could freeze to death on a night like this. The nearest town, as they recalled, was many miles back, a difficult, even impossible, walk. Then, as the fog cleared for a moment, they caught sight of a house not more than 100 yards away. There were no lights on, and the house looked deserted, but the sight of it cheered them anyway, and they made right for it. As they had suspected, the house was abandoned. It might have been a summer place closed for the season, though this house looked as if it had been empty for more than a few months. Besides, the house was too large to be a summer place. The sisters inspected the outside of the house with a flashlight, and they noticed that one of the shutters was broken and the window behind it was unlocked. It would be easy to raise the window and climb into the house. Juliet, the more decisive and impulsive of the sisters, suggested that they should get blankets out of the car and spend the night in the deserted house. Gwen objected, saying that you can't just go breaking into other people's houses. Juliet countered that by asking whether it was better to be a trespasser or freeze to death outside in the elements. The argument did not go on for long. There were just a few pieces of old furniture in the place. Obviously, everything of value had been removed long ago. The floor was covered with a thick layer of dust. The girls didn't like exploring, so they huddled on the floor wrapped in their blankets. It was cold, the floor was hard, and though Juliet and Gwen were both desperately tired, sleep did not come easily. They may have lain there for an hour, perhaps more, when both girls thought they heard a noise from the area of the fireplace. In the gloom, they could just barely make out what appeared to be the figure of a man dressed like a sailor. "Who's there?" Juliet shouted. At that, the figure seemed to shimmer and dissolve. They both stared at the fireplace for a long time, almost afraid to move, afraid that the figure would return. Finally, they told each other that it had been some sort of illusion, just a trick of the light, or maybe the trick of our eyes. After all, the figure had been so faint, it could barely be made out. After a day like they had experienced, it was no wonder they were seeing things. So after repeatedly, though not altogether convincingly, reassuring themselves, they finally fell asleep. In the morning, everything looked different and much more cheerful. The fog had lifted, and the sun could be seen through fast-moving clouds. The weather was definitely clearing. The house in which they had unexpectedly spent the night was old and dusty, but not at all spooky in the morning light. They probably would have always believed that the figure in front of the fireplace was just an illusion, had it not been for Gwen's acute eyesight. In the light, slanting through the shutters, she noticed something shine in front of the fireplace. It was a small pool of water in the midst of the otherwise undisturbed dust. The water didn't seem to have come from a leak in the floor or ceiling. And when she put her finger in the water and lifted it to her tongue, the taste was salty, like seawater. In the middle of the pool of water was a greenish substance that looked like a bit of seaweed. After that discovery, the sisters went out to the road where they were able to hail a passing motorist who gave them a tow to town. Within half an hour, the old Volvo was fixed and running again. After a disastrous start, the Thanksgiving weekend turned out to be a very nice one indeed. Still, the figure by the fireplace was never entirely forgotten. Gwen used to repeat the story frequently. It usually got a good reception, though most people didn't believe it. Then about a year later, she told the story at a party in New York. One of her listeners was a young marine biologist. "I would never have left that house without taking the seaweed," he said. "Of course you wouldn't," she answered, "and neither did I." Out of her purse, she took an envelope that contained a small, dry, brownish substance. Before she had left the house, Gwen had picked up the seaweed. Later, she dried it and carried it around as a sort of souvenir. The marine biologist asked if he could have the substance and said that he would take it back to his laboratory and try to identify it. Gwen agreed and gave him the envelope. He called her a few days later. "You're right," he said. "It is seaweed, though a rather rare kind. As far as we know, it grows only on dead things." That should teach you a lesson, boys and girls. Never go into old abandoned houses that you've never been to before and don't know anything about, because you never know what you're going to find inside or what might find you. So we have time for one more story. I'm going to go ahead and share another one. This one comes all the way from France, and they call it the Bordeaux Diligence. A Frenchman who had just lost his wife and was very sad was walking down the Rue du Bac in Paris one day. He saw three men looking at him very pleasantly and pointing to a woman at the end of the street. One of the men said, "Pardon us, sir, but would you do us a favor?" "Certainly," he replied. "Would you mind asking the lady at the end of the street at what time the Bordeaux diligence starts?" The man had no idea what they were talking about, but he wanted to be helpful, so he went up to the lady at the end of the street and said, "I beg your pardon. Could you tell me at what time the Bordeaux diligence starts?" The lady looked annoyed and answered quickly, "Don't ask me. Go ask the policeman there." So he went up to the policeman and put the same question to him. "What?" said the policeman. "At what time does the Bordeaux diligence start?" The policeman grabbed the man, put handcuffs on him, and marched him off to the police station. After a little while, he was brought up before the magistrate. The magistrate asked what the man was accused of. The policeman said, "He asked me at what time the Bordeaux diligence starts." "He asked that, did he?" said the magistrate. "Throw him in a cell." The poor man protested loudly, I only asked the time the Bordeaux diligence starts to oblige some men who asked me to ask a woman, who then told me to ask the policeman." "Put him in solitary," was the magistrate's reply. Later, the man was brought before a judge and jury. The judge said, "What is this man accused of?" The policeman answered, "He came and asked me at what time the Bordeaux diligence starts." "He did that," shouted the judge. "Gentlemen of the jury, is this prisoner guilty or not guilty?" "Guilty," they all cried. "Take him away," said the judge. 7 years on Devil's Island. So the poor man was taken on a convict ship to the notorious Devil's Island prison. After a few months on the island, he struck up a friendship with some of his fellow prisoners. One evening, they decided they would tell one another what had brought them to the prison. One man described how he had murdered his wife. Another told of hacking his business partner to death. And a third of kidnapping 3 small children. And so it went, with tales of death and violence through the evening. At the end of each story, all the listeners would nod and murmur sympathetically. Finally, it was the turn of the newest prisoner to tell his story. "Uh-oh," he began. I was walking down the Rue du Bac one day when I saw 3 men who asked me if I would ask a lady at the end of the street what time the Bordeaux diligence start. To oblige them, I went and asked her, and she told me to ask the policeman. When I asked him, he turned around and arrested me, and I was taken to the police station, and before the magistrate, and then before a judge and jury who sent me here. When he finished, there was a moment of silence. Then all the prisoners jumped up and started hitting the man. If the guards had not intervened, they would have beaten the poor man to death. After a while, the governor of the prison came to question the prisoners to see if some might be recommended for parole. Finally, the man was brought before the governor and asked the nature of his crime. So once again, he told his story. "That," said the governor, "put him on bread and water." The poor man called for the prison chaplain, but when he told the story of how he had arrived in the prison, the chaplain just turned and walked away. The poor unfortunate man spent 7 years in misery and agony on Devil's Island. Finally, he was allowed to go back to France. He had no money, no relatives, no friends, nothing. One day, shortly after his return, he found himself walking down the Rue du Bac, the very street upon which all his troubles had begun. Standing there at the end of the street was the same woman. She was no longer young. In fact, she looked old and horrible, but she was, without a doubt, the same woman. He rushed up to her and shouted, "You are the cause of all my troubles. Why? Why?" She shrieked at him, "Don't touch me! Don't touch me!" Then she handed him a slip of paper. "If you want to know why all of these things have happened, go to this address at midnight. Knock on the door and go in. I will be there, and I will tell you why you have suffered all of this misery." The man went to the address at midnight as instructed. He knocked and entered and found the woman waiting for him. She was lying on a couch looking very ill. "Now," he said, "tell me why I have suffered all of this." She pointed to a shelf over her head and said, "Give me a drink first." The man took a bottle from the shelf and poured her a drink. "Now," he said, "tell me." "And give me another drink," she said. So he poured her another drink, and after she had gulped it down, she began to speak. "Put your ear down here," she said. "I'm very weak and can't speak loudly." The man bent over and put his ear close to her face. Suddenly, she sprang forward, sank her teeth into his ear, and then with a sigh, fell back, dead. And thus ends this unusual story. Will we ever find out what the Bordeaux diligence is? I don't know, and really, I don't think I'll ever ask anyone what it is or when it starts if I ever visit France. Well, boys and girls, that was our show for tonight. I hope you enjoyed these spooky little stories, and I can't wait to come back after Thanksgiving and share a few more before the month of November is out. So until then, behave. Watch out for the spooks, especially if you go out. If you travel this Thanksgiving, be sure not to go into any abandoned dark houses. Don't pick up any seaweed. And for the love of all humanity, if you decide to visit France, please do not ask anyone about the Bordeaux diligence. Well, that's all for tonight, folks. So I bid you adieu, and as always, happy hauntings!